Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Show, presented by DraftKings. Here's your host, Marcus Grant.
What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show, presented by DraftKings. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, still masking and socially distancing when and where necessary. And we've got a very full Friday show for you. As always, Michael F. Florio will come and join us. We will recap what happened in Santa Clara on Thursday Night Football. We'll give you some best value draft picks for your daily fantasy lineups this week. And we'll also ask our nerd about quarterback play since the year 2000. We got that and plenty more in this show. But as we always do about this time, we'll talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire. And Murph, Notre Dame, you guys are playing in the marquee college football game of the weekend. You got to be excited about that one.
I am ultra jacked up. Besides the fact that the Pac-12 is coming back to see your Trojans play, and it's a conference I love watching. Glad about that. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I want Trevor Lawrence healthy, and I want to play Trevor Lawrence. I want to beat the best. It's always better to do that. It feels better. But the funny thing about college football is, like, so, you know, the Cowboys have their quarterbacks go down, and their backups are, you know, mediocre to below average. College football, you know, DJ steps in. He's a five-star recruit. He was the top quarterback in the recruiting class. Like, he's a good player. So it's not like you get, you know, there's not that much drop off like you see in the NFL. So, I got to hope for some turnovers from DJ, and that just the Notre Dame offensive line controls the clock and they just pound Clemson. I think it'll be a really, really good game despite Trevor Lawrence not playing.
It's amazing to watch some of these college programs just retool at quarterback. I mean, look at the run Alabama went through. The fact that Oklahoma put out back-to-back Heisman winners, and they've got another guy who's right in the running for the Heisman this year. Like, it is a different world in college football that they can just retool. But, this should be a lot of fun. So I'm sure you're going to be locked in for this one. And this, look, it takes your mind off of Sunday too, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I don't have to worry about the Giants as much. Although the funny thing is, it's the one team. Washington's the team that Daniel Jones does beat. It's only them and the Bucks, and we just missed on beating the Bucks. So I do expect a Giants victory. But I will be honest, I am hoping more for a Notre Dame victory. But I'll see what I get out of this weekend.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, Notre Dame, I think has they have more to play for, I think, at this point in the season than the Giants
for sure
do. So I understand sort of pushing your chips onto that part of the table. So we will check it out. Should be a fun weekend of college football, no doubt. Let's turn now to the NFL. And to help us do that, we'll bring in our pal Michael F. Florio. And I know, Florio, for you, and we've talked about this, college football in your part of the country isn't necessarily a big thing. But is there something in particular this weekend that you are looking forward to?
Well, yeah, outside of sports maybe, but also the Mets now are officially going to be owned, it looks like, as today by the richest owner in baseball, a guy who can flip the Yankees if he wanted to just for fun. So I'm pretty excited about that this week, and that's going to have me pretty ecstatic.
Yeah, I did. I never got a chance to ask you about that. Steve Cohen taking over. I mean, that's got to feel nice. It's a little bit liberating for you guys. There's hope, at least, in Metsville right now.
Yeah, I'm going from hoping to get like one B level free agent each winter to like this year I'm like spend everything, like let's get everyone because it's actually possible.
It is a brand new day in Queens for the Mets, so we'll see how that goes. Let us turn to what happened last night in Santa Clara. It was not pretty if you were a 49er fan. It was great for Packers fans. Green Bay gets a 34-17 win that was pretty easy, a game that was pretty much over by halftime. But you look at the top scorers from that game. Richie James, maybe the biggest surprise. 9 catches, 184 yards, and a touchdown. That was better than 33 points. Devontae Adams doing Devontae Adams things with 10 for 173 and a touchdown. And then Aaron Rodgers having just a very smooth night. 305 passing yards and 4 touchdowns in that one. But let's talk about Devontae Adams. I mean, I think we just need a moment to sort of appreciate what is going on with him right now. I mean, this is a guy who basically missed 2.5 games because of injury. He's also had a bye week so far this season. And as we talk right now, recording this show, Devontae Adams is the wide receiver one. I know, Florio, sometimes we can be prisoners of the moment. We can sort of revert to the last thing we've seen. But I mean, really, should we be talking about Davante Adams as a fantasy MVP right now?
Yeah, I think so. And that just shows you how well he's playing right now, because this is a guy who is a first round pick. So typically, if you're taken in the first round, it's hard for us to view you as the fantasy MVP because you were already expected to, you know, put up big numbers. And it more often than not, you just live up to those expectations rather than exceed them. But Davante Adams is greatly exceeding them. Like, he's played 6 games this year, and in 4 of them, he scored over 30 points and 2 of them over 40. And if you take away week 2, where he left early due to injury, well, he's averaging over 30 points per game right now. That is unheard of. Like, Michael Thomas was amazing last year, had one of the best fantasy wide receiver seasons we've ever had. He didn't put up numbers like this. So it just shows you right now, like, how good and how consistent Davante Adams is playing.
Coming into the season, there were a lot of people, I was one of them, who had Davante Adams pegged as the number one receiver in fantasy. And then he gets hurt. And so I kind of, in my head, I'm watching him perform, and I'm thinking, okay, my narrative at the end of the year will be, hey, he had a really good year, and he could have been the wide receiver one, except for blank. We might not have to put in the disclaimer anymore. I mean, because the way he's playing, the way Rodgers is throwing him the football, and let's make no mistake, Aaron Rodgers is playing great football too right now. These two are clicking on a level that it really is possible that Davante Adams ends up as the wide receiver one and won't have played anywhere close to 16 games. That is absolutely incredible. And I think it reassures people, because the top of the first round in fantasy drafts has been just an abject nightmare, right? I mean, we're probably getting Christian McCaffrey back, but Saquon's gone for the year. Michael Thomas has been just missing for a while. Zeke is now struggling because the Cowboys offense has gone bad. You go to the end of the first round, I mean, if people took Kenyon Drake, they're frustrated. If anybody pegged Joe Mixon at the back end of the first round, they're frustrated. So having Davante Adams... Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, having Davante Adams go in here and produce, he and Alvin Kamara are like the two guys, and I guess Derrick Henry are like the three guys that are kind of saving your first round right now, because otherwise it's been an absolute nightmare picking guys early in your draft. On the flip side, the 49ers, I mean, look, they were just depleted between injuries and COVID restrictions and that sort of thing. That offense was completely depleted. The one guy we thought you could count on was going to be Jamichael Hasty, because he had been running well. The Packer run defense had not been playing well this year. We didn't see much of Hasty. We saw a lot of Jerick McKinnon, who had an okay night. So now what? What do we make of how Kyle Shanahan used his running backs, and what can we do to kind of apply that going forward?
I think we have to just root for Raheem Mostert to come back, because when Mostert was here, like, this backfield was at least a little bit more predictable, right? Like, he was going to get the carries and maybe a handful of targets a week, but McKinnon was going to play the pass catching role there. And since he's gone down, it's really become a guessing game. It reminds me a lot of the Rams offense, right? Like, Kyle Shanahan's run game is still effective. Like, if you started Jerick McKinnon last night, you're feeling pretty good today, I think, but it just becomes so unpredictable week to week right now that while it is a good system for production, we just don't know who is going to be the productive back. And so much for, you know, McKinnon's tired legs and them needing to give him a break, because on a short week, he was just the one out there playing 3/4 of the snaps. And I trusted Hasty. I was advising people to play Hasty. My bad on that. I will say, though, I think Hasty deserves some blame here too. Like, the little bit of opportunity that he has gotten these last couple of weeks, he just hasn't done a whole lot with it. So I think if he was more productive, then he would be the back maybe that we were talking about tonight. I think kind of him not living up to those expectations that we set for him led for Shanahan to be like, all right, well, I got to get my veteran that I know is at least reliable in.
I think there's a lot of merit to that. And you talk about the snap share, 39 for McKinnon, just 14 for Hasty. And a couple people noted that there was a play early in the game where it looked like Hasty might have run the wrong way, that the quarterback, Nick Mullins, went to hand it off and McKinnon or Hasty wasn't there. And so that may have impacted how many snaps he played. I also think it's sort of fair to remember, I know we get excited about these guys who move up the depth chart and suddenly, you know, experience an opportunity and maybe succeed at least for a week or two in that opportunity. But I think it's also fair to remember there's also a reason that some of these guys were lower on the depth chart to begin with, that there are still things that they're working through, that there are things that they're trying to learn. There are mistakes that we don't see necessarily on game day that are happening in practice. And so it's great to see a guy like Jamichael Hasty run effectively and run hard. But there's also a reason to remember why he was on the practice squad for quite a while. There's some things that he's still working out. So maybe we take that into it. But I'm also with you that once Raheem Mostert comes back, hopefully that solves some of these problems and that makes everything better. But this was a pure case of Shanahanigans, I think, coming to rear its ugly head in a matchup that seemed really, really good for Jamichael Hasty. At this point, though, look, we're waiting on Mostert. We've probably lost George Kittle for the rest of the year. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be out for an extended period of time. We'll see what happens with the wide receivers. How many 49ers would you want to have on your roster for the rest of the year now?
It's slim pickings. Like it's Mostert. I think Jerick McKinnon is still one that I would want because he has a role as the pass catching specialist there, even when Mostert comes back. And again, Mostert's been in and out of the lineup all year. So I think McKinnon is one that you would want to hold. And then whichever one comes back first of Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk, like they were seeing volume at least before they had to miss time. So but right now, and I would say Jordan Reed is like on that when he is healthy, because I wish I saw this report earlier. I started Jordan Reed in a couple of weeks. I didn't see it till after the game that it was reported that he was going to play around 10 snaps last night. And that's what he did. He played, I believe, 12 snaps and two targets. It just wasn't a good night for him. But I do think that next week now after this, you know, mini bye week that they get after playing on Thursday night, he will be fully good to go. And that could be one game. It could be the rest of the year. Who knows? But I think their tight end, who if it's Reed or Dwelly, they can be, just because of the state of tight end, they can be worth rostering in fantasy. But it's getting pretty grim. And Marcus, I do want to thank you, because in a super flex league, I was going back and forth all night last night, Nick Mullins or DeAndre Swift. And just before kickoff, I was like, let me run this by Marcus. You steered me in the right direction and told me to go with DeAndre Swift.
I'm glad I could help. You know, it's funny. You talk about that report about Jordan Reed. Kyle Shanahan is turning into the king of telling us things we should have known the day before, right? And like I say that jokingly, right? Because he's obviously not going to necessarily put out his entire game plan because, you know, the opponent has Twitter also. But it is, you know, we find out about Jerick McKinnon's tired legs after the fact. We find out about Jordan Reed's 10 snaps after the fact. So that's a little bit frustrating. We're not advising to pick up Richie James, right? This was like a 1 week thing. We're not buying into Richie James, are we?
I'm not. I mean, he played really well. He still had a couple of mistakes. Like, he could have had an even bigger day, which is the scary part. He outscored Devontae Adams, but it's a 1 week thing. Like, I'm not buying into this long term.
He had more catches and yards last night than he did all of last season. So that kind of gives you a clue of, you're right. that gives you a clue about Richie James and his status within the offense. So, all right. So the Packers still rolling along, the 49ers sort of regrouping, and we'll see what happens with that. In the meantime, let's look at a couple of fantasy headlines, shall we? We'll start with the Detroit Lions. The report came out earlier this week that Matthew Stafford is on the reserve COVID-19 list. However, he could play this week against the Minnesota Vikings. He needs to test negative for the remainder of the week, and then the Lions will make a decision whether or not he'll be able to go. The first question here, though, is if you have Matthew Stafford, how are you trying to navigate this situation?
Oh, if you have Matthew Stafford and you were planning on starting him this week, because I understand why. Like, Matthew Stafford hasn't been, you know, amazing in fantasy, but he's been consistent and playing better as of late. And the Vikings have given up a good amount of points to quarterbacks. But you should already have another quarterback on your roster, because if he's out, you don't want to, you know, pick up his backup and just plug him in. Like, you want to – there's better options on the waiver wire. So I think that you 100% – should have a backup plan in place. And the same thing goes if you were planning on starting TJ Hockenson or maybe I think Hockenson you could still use because it's tight end. But if you were planning on like streaming Marvin Jones Jr. this week, well, have a backup plan in place, because that's going to look a lot less appealing if Matt Stafford is out this week.
So you're saying you're not excited about Chase Daniel or David Blau as your fantasy quarterback if it were to come to that. I would agree. I mean, I think there's a reason we've been sort of advocating streamers this week. And look, we didn't know at the start of the week that this was going to be a thing. But we've been talking this week about Drew Lock, about Derek Carr, who's another good streaming option going up against the Chargers. So there are guys out there that are likely available on some waiver wires that you can pick up and start in the event that Matthew Stafford does not go this week. So that's a thing just to kind of monitor. We'll certainly know a whole lot more on Saturday and probably getting into Sunday morning when we kind of have a definitive answer on what happens with Stafford. But it is wise just to sort of be prepared. And you talked about the pass catchers here, because I know a lot of people were sort of looking in the direction of, say, Marvin Jones or you know, Quintez Cephas. I know Adam Rank sort of likes as a deep sleeper this week. But if there is no Stafford, you are sort of pivoting away from these guys, right?
Yeah, like I wrote about Marvin Jones in the sleeper article this week, and I very much so would use him if Matthew Stafford is active. But if he is inactive, I think it just leads to a lot of question marks, right? Like that's a big downgrade in the quarterback play. And then it's also like with a different quarterback, we've seen this, Marcus, where a quarterback will come in off the bench or whatever, and he could have a rapport with a different receiver that we weren't really anticipating. So for me, it just becomes too much question marks around this team and their passing game for me to trust, you know, going deep with a guy like Marvin Jones.
Yeah, I agree. So that's this is another one. Look, wide receiver, I feel like, is a little bit easier to pivot from. And I know there are buys this week, so that might make it slightly more difficult. But it's a lot easier, I think, to find wide receiver help than it is quarterback help, and certainly tight end help. So you mentioned Hockenson earlier. You might sort of be locked into him because it's going to be hard to go out and at the last minute find better options. But again, all of this will sort of shake out, I think, by the time we get to Sunday morning, and you can make a more informed decision. Down to Miami, Matt Breida is dealing with a hamstring injury, and according to head coach Brian Flores, there's a chance he could play this week against the Cardinals. Now, if you listen to the reports or read the reports, you know, sometimes they say there's a chance a guy could play and it's more optimistic. This was more of, yeah, there's a chance he could play. It didn't seem quite as optimistic for Matt Breida. We know Myles Gaskin is currently on injured reserve, so he's not available. So that leaves a backfield of Jordan Howard, Patrick Laird, and Savon Ahmed, a guy who went to the University of Washington. Any chance you would think about putting any of these guys in your lineup against Arizona?
Sadly, yes. Like, I have leagues out there right now where I'm missing like Joe Mixon and Gio Bernard this week. I'm missing Boston Scott and Kareem Hunt. Like, in those leagues, I'm looking at the waiver wire. Jordan Howard is the best name still available to pick up and plug in their absence. And I know it feels dirty to say, but I think this is a week where there's going to be volume to be had there because, again, it's Tua's second start, and we saw last week they really were not asking Tua to do much at all. I know their defense scored the two touchdowns, and they didn't really have to ask him, but I think that is going to be similar to their game plan this week. Like, I don't think they're going to ask Tua to throw 40-plus times this week, especially since the strength of the Cardinals' defense is in that secondary. I think they're going to look to keep the game close, keep the ball out of Kyler Murray's hands, and you do that by grinding out the clock and running the ball. I know it's not, you know, a sexy option for fantasy, but Jordan Howard could be looking at, I think, 15 plus touches this week. And I have no doubts that if they get a carry near the goal line, it's going to Jordan Howard. I think Patrick Laird is just more of a deep league. You hope he catches a couple passes, but I think Howard is the name that fantasy owners should be looking at.
Which sort of brings me back full circle to where I was in August, where I thought Jordan Howard was going to be kind of a nice mid-round value pick. And look, I admit that I was wrong about that because, you know, he was scoring touchdowns, but he was also getting, you know, one carry for 2 yards or two carries for 1 yard and a touchdown. And it just wasn't enough to sustain you. So I have since, you know, put him on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues. But I can tell myself a story where if you are in a need, like you talked about in your leagues, that you can go back and get Jordan Howard and have him be a viable starter for you this week. So we have, you know, time is a flat circle. That's what Rustin Cole told us all those many years ago in True Detective. So here we are back to Jordan Howard again. So I know it's not appealing. It's not super exciting, but this is where we are. I'm also having flashbacks to last year where late in the season, I was forced to start Patrick Laird at a couple of spots. And I don't feel great about that moment. But here we are. Here we are again. All right. Today's show is sponsored by DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings has millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs. So download the DraftKings app now. Use code TEAM during sign-up and start feeling the sweat like never before. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Salute to Service is the NFL's year-round effort to honor, empower, and connect with our nation's service members, veterans, and their families through long-standing partnerships that support our military community. The NFL, its clubs, and players thank all of our armed forces serving in the United States and around the world. Join the NFL in Salute to Service by visiting NFL.com/salute. All right, time for some of our big questions heading into week 9 and maybe the biggest one, the one that I think we have all been asking ourselves and being asked about is what's going on down in Tampa Bay. Antonio Brown is expected to be on the field this week for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, making his debut down there alongside Tom Brady. They play what? One game together in New England. But AB will be on the field. Now, to throw a wrinkle into this, Chris Godwin is also expected to play this week. So that means it is a fully loaded complement of receivers that Brady has to throw to. With AB, though, what approach are you taking? Are you starting him this week?
So I actually picked up AB in a good amount of leagues, and in most, I am keeping him on the bench and taking a wait-and-see approach. There's one league where I'm struggling to fill my flex spot, and I might lean with Antonio Brown just because of his upside. I do think he's still, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Tom Brady tried to force him the ball, especially near the goal line, and he finished with double-digit fantasy points this week. But there's a lot of unknown here. Like, I had him in the wide receiver 2 range when it looked like Chris Godwin was going to be out just because of volume, but now it looks like Godwin is going to be ready to play again. And if so, I think that lowers Antonio Brown down to at least wide receiver 3 territory. He's a pure boom or bust option, in my opinion. Even Bruce Arians said he could play 10 snaps or he could play like the full allotment of snaps this week. So I don't think we really have any sense of Antonio Brown. The only sense I think that we can really go off of, Marcus, is that one game that you mentioned last year with Antonio Brown. Tom Brady was peppering him the ball. He played one game, and I think it took him like week 14 for anyone else on the team to surpass him in end zone targets for the Patriot lead. Like, it was that many in one game, but there's more weapons here. So I think Antonio Brown is purely boom or bust.
I really feel like that the answer you gave was sort of the answer that everybody's kind of leaning with, that if there was no Chris Godwin, we would all feel better about playing Antonio Brown. But now that it looks like Godwin is going to play, I think we're sort of pivoting away from AB and we are kind of taking that wait and see stance. I also go back to that game in New England last year, and I feel like we sort of pegged that one for what it was, that when the Patriots got him in and got him on the field, that they wanted to get him up to speed and get him comfortable in that offense as soon as possible. So that was the reason they peppered him with targets, because they knew they needed wide receiver help. This one is not so urgent that they can slowly work him in if they need to and not necessarily mess up the flow of the offense. Because as you mentioned, look, Godwin's going to be there and get targets. They still have to kind of feed Mike Evans at some point. Rob Gronkowski has become, you know, a much more viable option. And they still have 2 running backs that they have to try to work into this one. So I don't see the same level of urgency to get Antonio Brown a ton of targets this week. So if you have that luxury, and look, if you went out and picked him up on the waiver wire, knowing that you were going to have to stash him for a couple of weeks, you probably have the luxury of waiting at least one more week. So I would tend to err on the side of caution, knowing that the guy who is the primary target in the offense is going to be there, and that, you know, AB might have to take a little bit of a back seat, at least in the short term. Speaking of guys coming back, Christian McCaffrey is finally back after missing 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. I know the Panthers were hoping maybe to get him back last week, but with it being a Thursday night game, they figured, the phrase of the week, a phrase of the month, I guess, or year, out of an abundance of caution, they were going to sit him down. But now he is back for a matchup against the Chiefs, which on paper isn't that great necessarily, but what should we expect from Christian McCaffrey in his return?
Yeah, this is the opposite of Antonio Brown, right? Like, there's no doubt here, in my opinion, there's no question mark here. Like, you have Christian McCaffrey, you've waited since week 2 to get him back in your fantasy lineup. You start him this week. Like, I have him ranked as a top 5 running back. Maybe he sees a little bit less work than normal, but it sounds like he's back at full health, right? Like, he was pushing to play last week, but with it being a Thursday night game, like you said, and bad weather, they were cautious and they held him out, but he's been a full go all week at practice. And everything out of from him and from Panthers camp just seems to be raving about how good he looks. Maybe Mike Davis eats in a little bit just to ease Christian McCaffrey back in, but I don't think it's enough to even downgrade McCaffrey outside the top five running backs.
You probably spent the number one overall pick on Christian McCaffrey. You have been sort of patching holes in your lineup for him, with him, or waiting on him for the last 6 weeks. You're playing Christian McCaffrey. You don't care what the matchup is. You're not parsing this out. And as Adam Rank would say, who are you going to play over him? You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to go in and get J.D. McKissic and try to plug him in? Are you going to hope for DJ Dallas to get some extra touches? You're going to play Christian McCaffrey, and you're just going to kind of live and die with whatever happens, because, you know, this is what the situation is. I have enjoyed, though, that all the reports out of Carolina have been, well, what does he look like? And all the coaches are like, he looks like Christian McCaffrey. Like, and we all know what that means.
The best running back in football.
Yeah, exactly. We all know what that means. Like, okay, sweet. Let's get him back in our lineups and let's go from there. The Bills, you know, they're still playing good football. They're still, you know, looks like they're on track to win the AFC East. But for fantasy, we have sort of been frustrated because Josh Allen has been scuffling for the last few weeks. The Patriots are, you know, they're not the same. They've got a good matchup this week. The Bills do against the Seahawks, whose secondary has been struggling. Is this the Josh Allen bounce back game we've been waiting for?
I think so. I mean, and it's long overdue. Like, the first 4 weeks of the season, Josh Allen did not score less than 25 fantasy points in a game. The last 4 weeks, he has not scored 17 in a game. So it's just been a night and day each of the first 2 months for Josh Allen. But the Seahawks allow the most fantasy points to quarterbacks. They allow the most passing yards by far, and it's been consistent. Like, each week they're giving up a lot of production to the quarterback position. I don't expect that to change this week. I think Josh Allen, and again, I think part of what helps him too is that the Bills defense hasn't been what it was in recent years. So I'm still expecting Russell Wilson to do his thing and him and DK and Lockett to put up numbers, which makes me think that Josh Allen's going to have to throw even more to keep up with that offense.
I completely agree with you, and throw in the fact that the Seahawks run defense has actually been pretty good, which means it might be a little bit tougher for Devin Singletary and Zach Moss to get going. And if Russ continues to cook the way he has been cooking, it is going to be incumbent on Josh Allen to throw the football and continue to kind of keep pace with that Seahawks offense this week. So I expect good things out of Josh Allen. I think you've sort of been plugging him into your lineup, waiting for the kaboom to happen again. And I think this is the week that it finally happens back in your lineup. I have been told for a couple years now that Marquise Brown is going to be a big thing. And I am still waiting for it to happen on a consistent basis. Like, you know, he'll have a couple of nice blow up games, and then he'll have games where he gets, you know, like 17 yards or something like that. This past week, Lamar Jackson sort of said, look, this is on me, that I'm not getting the ball to Marquise Brown enough, that I got to get him more targets. I got to help him out a little bit. This week, they don't have a great matchup, but are you expecting that Lamar is going to make good on his promise and that maybe we see some more targets to Brown this week?
First, I got to admit, like, I think one of the people driving the Marquise Brown hype train all summer long. I had high expectations for him, and I felt great after week one. And it just, even the first like month of the season, like, he was, if you look at percentages, right, like seeing a high percentage of targets and air yards and everything. But then when you look at the raw numbers, you're like, all right, yeah, he's seeing 30% of this team's targets, but that equals 6 targets per game. Like, that's not a big number. And part of me is a little bit excited this week for Marquise Brown as kind of a last ditch. Like, let's see what he can do. Let's see if he has like a squeaky wheel type of game where he expressed his frustration and now they're going to come out and game plan around him and make sure to get him the ball. But it's also not like they haven't been trying. Like, he has the third most targets of 20 plus air yards this year, but they're just not connecting on those. So I don't expect Lamar Jackson to suddenly be like, all right, Marquise Brown, complain, let me throw the ball to him better on these deep throws. Like, it's just an issue there. They haven't been connecting. I think what I'm hoping for, and what I think if you have Marquise Brown, you have to be hoping for, is that they design more plays closer to the line of scrimmage for him. Just get him the ball in space and let him use his speed, because down the field, those throws just haven't been there this year.
That's the point that I am sort of looking at, is if they're just going to use him as a deep threat, he's always going to be sort of this boom or bust guy, right? He's going to be sort of Deshaun Jackson-ish, right? Where he will have those huge home run games. He'll also have some games where he just strikes out a lot. And I think that's sort of what we're seeing. If they can start using him in a more varied set of routes, get him the ball in space, let him work, because he's just electric with the football in his hands, then I think we start to see more consistency from him. But as long as they're just sending him down the field and hoping that Lamar Jackson can hook up with him, we're going to continue to have that volatility. So it's going to be interesting. The matchup, like I said, is not great against Indianapolis this week. So maybe this is their opportunity to try some more creative things with him, and we'll see what happens. But it's hard for me to want to ride that roller coaster on a week-to-week basis. Staying in the division, the Steelers have a dream matchup against the Cowboys this week. It is one of those that we're always picking on when we're setting our fantasy lineups. You look at their wide receivers, though, right? I mean, Deontay Johnson seems to be the number one guy there. They've got Chase Claypool. The Juju Smith-Schuster still hanging around there. When you look at all these wide receivers, which one do you think has the best outlook? Because Ben Roethlisberger has been sort of spreading the ball around to all of them.
Yeah, this Steelers passing game is just not what it once was. Like, it's spreading the ball out a lot more. They used to funnel it to one or two wide receivers, which was awesome. They also would throw the ball downfield more. Like, Big Ben is averaging a career low in air yards per target, and that's worrisome to me coming off of the elbow injury that he suffered last year. But I think this week, and I feel like going forward, Deontay Johnson is the number one target here. Like, I tweeted last week a picture of a guy from SpongeBob in like a body cast and said, like, this is Deontay Johnson this year, because every week it feels like he's leaving with a different injury, hamstring, toe, all these other things. But when he's healthy, he sees double digit targets each week. And the Cowboys off defense, the one thing that they've been pretty good at this year is stopping slot receivers, and Juju runs most of his routes out of the slot. So I don't love him as much this week. I have those two very close. And I will say, I think Chase Claypool is high upside. He had 9 targets last week, but he has 2 really big games this year, and the rest are just completely unusable in fantasy. So I think he's just purely boom or bust each week right now too.
He is sort of sliding, like we talked about with Hollywood Brown. He's kind of that home run hitter that's going to strike out quite a few times. So if you plug him in and he gives you one of those big games, it's great. Otherwise, you're looking at a pretty bad number in your lineup. I'm with you that Deontay Johnson is sort of the receiver of choice there for Ben Roethlisberger. But it's been a little bit hard to pick. I mean, maybe it's because we expected so much out of Juju this year, and that hasn't really happened. And then we got stars in our eyes over Chase Claypool in his couple of big games. But I do think that when it's all said and done, you know, Deontay Johnson has stepped in and has become the top wide receiver there in Pittsburgh. So maybe we should stop trying to make fetch happen with some of these other guys and just sort of let it fall where it does. And understand that, you know, there's one guy there that is the one true guy you can sort of count on a regular basis. For more analysis like that, you can join me and Flory alongside Adam Rank and Kimmy Checks on Sunday mornings on NFL Fantasy Game Day. We'll have all the latest injury news. We'll have ads, drops, starts, sits, all of that kind of good stuff leading you right up until kickoff. We get started at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and you can see us streaming on NFL.com, in the NFL Fantasy app, and YouTube as well. In fact, if you're watching it on YouTube, Florio is there answering questions for you right up until about 15 minutes before kickoff. It's time for Best Value, presented by DraftKings, as we do every week about this time. We try to give you the most bang for your fantasy buck when you are setting your DFS lineups for the week. So, start at quarterback, Florio. Who is your best value in week 9?
It is someone that I think I've overlooked a little bit in the past, but it's Derek Carr. Like, he's playing really good football right now. He has scored over 19 fantasy points in 4 of his last 6 games, finished as a top 12 quarterback in 2 of his last 3, and that bodes well for him because the Chargers have allowed a top 12 quarterback in 4 of their last 6 games. They're allowing the 3rd most fantasy points to quarterbacks. And another thing that I don't think Carr gets enough credit for, Marcus, is he's using his legs a little bit more, right? Like, he is between 19 and 41 rushing yards in 4 of his last 6 games. And I know you could be saying at home, like, 19 rushing yards, that's not a whole lot, but that's 2 additional, like, free bonus fantasy points you get. So they do matter, and I think it makes Carr a better value.
I think especially that 19 or more fantasy points in 2 of the last 3 games is important, because you're talking about You're talking about a value guy, right? And if you're talking to more, you know, more traditional leagues, a streaming quarterback, to get 19 points is a pretty nice number, right? For a guy that's not considered an elite top level quarterback. So if you can get that, then I think you sort of roll with that. And we saw last week what Drew Locke was able to do against the Chargers. I expected Derek Carr can sort of do that against the Chargers as well. And you know, throwing the fact that he's occasionally throwing the ball deep. Now that he's got Henry Ruggs there, that's always been the knock on him, that he does not go downfield. But it appears that he's doing that now that he's got a legitimate field stretcher in Ruggs. Over to running back. Who's your value pick there?
We're on opposite ends of the spectrum here, Marcus. I'm going with Melvin Gordon. So much of it is the matchup here against the Falcons. And the reason I went with Gordon over the guy you're going to pick, who I also do like this week, is because on the year, Melvin Gordon is the one that they trust and they have been using more in the passing game. And that is big this week because the Falcons are in the top five in catches allowed to running backs. So I think if this becomes a higher scoring game and we're getting a little bit more passing out of Drew Locke and this Broncos offense, like many of us are expecting this week, I think it could be Melvin Gordon that gets, you know, 4 or 5 plus targets this week. And it helps give him a safe floor at just $5,300 on DraftKings.
I'm going to go, you mentioned, I'm going to go the other guy in that backfield and go with Philip Lindsay, because I think the matchup obviously is very good. Lindsay is, you know, he's sort of a big play guy. I mean, you give him the football anytime and you have to watch out because he can go the distance with it. So my fear about this backfield all year long has been that it's going to be a hot hand situation, that one of these guys is going to have a good game and that's going to be the guy. So this could go really either way, or because it's the Falcons defense, both these guys could succeed. That is certainly within the realm of possibilities as well. So I'm going to lean with Lindsay on this one here, but I think Melvin Gordon is equally a good choice and the salaries are just about even there. So it's a value, I think, either way that you go. Over to wide receivers, I look at this one and I like it. I'm not saying you're a homer. I think this is a smart pick here at wide receiver.
Thank you. I'm going with Cole Beasley of the Buffalo Bills. Yes, I am a Bills fan, but it has everything to do with the matchup here, right? Like Seattle is allowing the most, by far, most fantasy points and receiving yards to wide receivers. But taking it even a step further, they've allowed a top 12 wide receiver in every single game this year. So you may be saying, all right, well, that means Stephon Diggs is a great play this week. But they've also allowed a second wide receiver to finish as a top 25 fantasy receiver in all but two games this year. So I think there's going to be production from someone outside of Stephon Diggs. And I think it is Beasley, as the slot has been a big weakness for Seattle. They've allowed the most fantasy points to receivers lined up in the slot, the most yards, and Cole Beasley has just low-key been pretty reliable outside of last week when people started to take notice of him. But before that, you know, like he's on pace for just under 1,000 yards this year, 80 catches. He's just a reliable option each week, and I think this week he has more upside than usual.
I'm going to stay in that Denver-Atlanta game, and I'm going to go with Jerry Jeudy. And we're still waiting, I think, for the real true Jerry Jeudy breakout game, and I do think that it could come this week. I like Drew Locke as a streamer in more traditional leagues. I've said that all week long, and I think he's going to start spreading the ball around and trying to get the rookie more involved. We've seen him make some really nice plays occasionally. We know how much the Falcons secondary has struggled, and this could be a game that sees a lot of points in both directions. So I think Jeudy is primed to have the big game we have been waiting all season for him to have. Look, let's we talk about tight ends. We might as well just stay in Denver, right? I mean, it makes the most sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we have Broncos at basically every position this week. I'm going with Noah Fant here. I know 4,600 isn't a huge value, but I think once you get outside, you know, that like if you're not paying up for Travis Kelce, all the other tight ends are kind of similarly priced. And Fant has been seeing targets go his way each week. He's in the top 7 in target share amongst tight ends. His fantasy production has been much better with Drew Locke than with the other quarterbacks. And the Falcons are allowing the most fantasy points per game to tight ends. So I think it's just the opportunity plus a good matchup there makes him a really strong play this week.
I'm going with a deeper dive here, and I'm going with Jordan Akins for the Houston Texans. And I know he's not a name that immediately springs to mind when you talk about the tight end position, but when he's been healthy, he has been the number one tight end in that Houston Texans offense. And I think this is an opportunity for him to go out and sort of get back into the rhythm he was having. Look, when he played earlier in the season, he was third on the team in targets. So Deshaun Watson was looking his way quite a bit. He's been out for some time because of multiple injuries that he's been suffering, but he's going to be back this week. And he's got what I think is a very good matchup against the Jaguars, who've given up 7 touchdowns to tight ends. That's second most so far in the league. So you may not have thought about him. You might not know who he is, but Jordan Akins is the name that is worth plugging in, at least in some spots, just sort of for the upside potentially and the flexibility he gives you roster-wise. Over to the defense there. What's your value defense for the week?
I'm going with the Houston Texans, and they are a defense that I've picked up in a bunch of regular, like, seasonal leagues, and I'm streaming them there as well. The Jaguars offense has not been anything to write home about outside of James Robinson all year. And now they're taking out Gardner Minshew, and we're getting 6th-round pick Jake Luton making his first NFL start. Such an unknown at the NFL level. And we've already heard him talking about, like, what it's going to be like having, like, J.J. Watt try to chase him down and stuff. I'm not saying the moment's going to be too big for the kid or anything like that, but when it's such an unknown in an offense that's already been struggling this year, I think that there's an opportunity that the Texans defense can have a big fantasy day.
I like that, especially because of the change at quarterback. I'm going to go with the Washington football team this week. Their defense has been playing pretty well all year, but the biggest reason is they're taking on the Giants here, and there's one thing we know, that Daniel Jones still struggles with the turnover. The streak is lengthy for him in terms of turning the football over, and I think that is where Washington can make some hay there. Here's the thing. On the flip side, the Giants defense might not be a terrible start either going against the Washington offense, just because they're prone to give up sacks and turnovers as well. So the defenses on both sides of this thing could end up being fairly productive, but I'm going to plug Washington in as my value pick this week. All right, there you go. That was Best Value presented by DraftKings. It's time for Best of the Pack presented by Panini Trading Cards, where every week we open a pack of Panini trading cards, and we tell you who is the best in there, and we kind of talk about him a little bit. So let's start with a running back here. It's James Conner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. We talked about the Steelers passing game a little bit earlier in the show, but Conner, he gets to face the Dallas Cowboys this week. How high do you have him ranked?
He was my RB5 before I had to put Christian McCaffrey back in the top 5 and knocking him out, but he is very much so an RB1 for me this week. The Cowboys defense, we know they've given up a ton of points all year, a ton of yards, but I think this is their offense would at least keep games competitive and make teams have to throw against them. That I am not expecting to be the case this week. It hasn't been since really Dak's gone down. And if I'm expecting the Steelers to be playing with the lead throughout, I think it's going to be a lot of riding James Conner in the second half.
I feel like this is going to be, some Ben Roethlisberger throwing the football early, watching the Steelers get out to a lead, and then third and fourth quarter, they just sort of grind this thing out. The hope would be, if you have James Conner, that they stay with Conner the whole time and that they don't at some point pull him and go to Benny Snell late in the game. But I do think that this is a big, big game coming for the Steelers running back. All right, next. Let's go. Hunter Henry, tight end for the Los Angeles Chargers. It seems like Justin Herbert coming in has elevated just about everybody except really Hunter Henry. He's the tight end, I think, 15 right now, which doesn't really necessarily mean a whole lot considering the state of the position. But how are you feeling about Hunter Henry now versus maybe how you felt about him in the preseason?
Not great. Like, I thought Hunter Henry was one of the tight ends that had the upside to take that next step and be, I'm not saying like be what Darren Waller was or Mark Andrews was last year, but similar to that, like a tight end that you can stream, like that you could start every single week and not really have to worry about the position. And the first couple of weeks, it looked like he would be, but in 3 of his last 4 games, he scored less than 8 fantasy points. He has just 1 touchdown all year. Keenan Allen is getting force-fed the ball by Justin Herbert every single week. Mike Williams is more involved now, and that's hurting Hunter Henry. I get it. You can't, like, drop him because of the state of tight end, but I don't think that he is a guy that you plug in your lineup and don't question each and every week. Like, I think there's better options some weeks, and right now I don't even think I have him ranked as a tight end 1 this week.
In the preseason, he was one of those mid-round tight ends that I didn't necessarily feel great about. But I also felt like of those sort of mid-range tight ends that maybe he was the one with the best outlook. And I will admit that maybe this is some of the residue of how I felt about him coming out of college, where I liked him and I thought he was a good fit. And I've been waiting for the big breakout season. The first couple of years, he was still kind of sharing time and targets with Antonio Gates. Then once Gates left, then Henry gets hurt and he's dealt with injuries. Now he's healthy and he's in there with a quarterback throwing the football well, and it just still isn't working out. So maybe this just is who Hunter Henry is going to be in the NFL. And I am just, I will say that I'm kind of disappointed. Maybe I didn't expect the moon. I wasn't expecting him to be a top five tight end, but I was expecting more than we've gotten this year. And it's a little bit frustrating, especially because, like I said, Justin Herbert's been so good for so many other Chargers pass catchers. He just hasn't really been good for Hunter Henry. All right. Our last one.
We're chasing the ghost of Antonio Gates.
We are.
In this offense.
We absolutely are. Maybe Hunter Henry should have played basketball. Maybe that's the problem.
That's what he's missing. I think yeah. We're onto it.
Yeah, he didn't play basketball. All right, our last one here. Laviska Shenault for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And this is a guy that I know that I've loved all season long and has had some nice moments. You talked about Jake Luton coming in to start at quarterback this week. How much of an effect is that going to have on Shenault's usage and production?
I could definitely see it leading to some more carries for Shenault, as I'm expecting the Jaguars to rely heavily on their run game, James Robinson, and we know that Shenault will get involved there, here or there. The targets, I'm not totally sure of, because they've been up and down already this year. I, with a new quarterback, again, the passing tendencies, we don't know who his favorite target is going to be exactly. So I'm not saying give up on Shenault, but right now, like, I'm taking a wait-and-see approach with him before getting him back in my lineup.
If I have him, I don't think I'm dropping him. And I know he's not rostered in a ton of leagues right now, but if I have him, I'm still holding on to him just because he does have that jack-of-all-trades appeal. But I'm with you. Until we get a sense of how this offense works with Jake Luton or whatever their option is going to be, because I'm not certain that Luton is going to be the starter for the rest of the year. I mean, Minshew could come back and take that job once he's healthy again. I do want to see exactly what they're doing with Shenault. I feel like he's sort of, I guess the best comparison I'd have for him now is sort of what the Panthers are doing with Curtis Samuel, right? Where they're using him in a lot of different ways. And maybe he'll have that big game like Samuel did on Thursday night a couple weeks ago. But I don't think it's going to happen regularly enough. And I don't know that I feel confident enough, especially against the Chiefs against the Texans this week, to give him a start. So I would probably hold off on keeping him in my lineup. All right. It's time now for one of my favorite segments, Ask a Nerd, where we go to our pal Matt Okada and we ask him to kind of dive deep and come up with some good research nuggets for us. This week, we asked our resident nerd about the best single game quarterback performances since the year 2000. What do you got for us, Matt?
Thanks, Marcus. Ask a Nerd has been on a roll foreshadowing big fantasy games, so let's make it a three-peat as we tackle the top five single-game fantasy performances by a quarterback this millennium. At number five, we start with a big game for Big Ben Roethlisberger, who posted 44.8 fantasy points against the Colts in Week 8, 2014. Big Ben threw for 522 yards, tying Boomer Esiason for fourth most in NFL history, and added six touchdowns. Number four might be a bit of a surprise. It's former Eagles legend Nick Foles. Foles tied the NFL record with seven touchdown passes in Week 9, 2013 against the Raiders, adding 406 yards for a total of 45.2 fantasy points. Number three on our list is Aaron Rodgers and his 45.9 fantasy points, but not entirely for the reasons you might expect. Rodgers had only 408 yards and four scores through the air, along with the only interception on our list, but added 36 yards and two scores as a runner versus the Broncos in Week 4, 2011, amidst his MVP season. Coming in at number two is Peyton Manning in the first game of what would become the greatest passing season in NFL history. In Week 1, 2013, Manning became another member of the exclusive 7 TD Club, and added 462 yards against the reigning Super Bowl champion Ravens for a final mark of 46.3 fantasy points. And finally, at number one, we journey back to Week 10, 2010, to watch our second Eagles QB, the electric Michael Vick, put up 49.3 fantasy points against Washington. Not surprisingly, Vick did most of his work on the ground with 80 yards and two TDs, but he also added 333 yards and four TDs through the air. That's it for Week 9 of Ask a Nerd. Good luck to your starting QB this week, and may the fantasy points be with you.
Thank you, Matt. Good stuff as always. And, you know, the last couple weeks we've done this, it has led to some big performances. I mean, 2 weeks ago we talked about wide receivers and Tyler Lockett blew up. Last week we talked about running backs and it was Dalvin Cook who blew up. So Matt's been kind of on a roll. So let's kind of do this conversation the way we have. Let's see if we can keep this going. If you could pick a quarterback who's been drafted since the year 2000 for your fantasy squad, who would it be?
Marcus, this was one I didn't have to look up like stats or anything for. I went with my heart. I went with the player who really made me fall in love with football. I'm going with Peyton Manning. He was just, for me, like a Bills fan growing up rooting against Tom Brady. I was always on like the Peyton Manning side of that rivalry, but I don't know. It was just so much fun to watch Peyton all the time. And like 1 year I drafted him, he had the neck surgery. My season was over before it started, but then another, he made up for it. I drafted him. I had him on that big week one game he had that you saw in Matt Okada. I had him, Noshawn Marino, and Eric Decker on a team, rewrote like all the scoring records for that league. And it was just one of the most fun years I had in fantasy, and just Peyton Manning gave me so many good memories. I'm going with him.
All right, so I might be more prisoner of the moment, but I'm going to go with Patrick Mahomes just because the guy's been so lights out just since taking over the starting job there in Kansas City. I mean, he's we've gotten to the point that we're talking about drafting him in the second or third round in fantasy leagues. We expect he's going to go out and give us huge numbers every week to the point that when you know you only get 20 points out of Patrick Mahomes, we look around and we're like, what's wrong? Like, what happened? What went wrong with Mahomes this week? So, yeah, maybe it is some recency bias going on here, but I'm gonna go with Patty Mahomes and have him. You know, nothing wrong with Peyton, certainly, but I'm gonna go more recent vintage, if you will. Okay, so since we talked about you know guys overall, and I mentioned some of the guys recently that have had blow up games after we've done Ask a Nerd, if there's a quarterback this week that could you know, have one of these all time top five games, who do you think it's gonna be?
I'm going with Kyler Murray here. He scored 21 fantasy points in every single game this year, so the floor for him to have like a big game is already there. And I think with no Kenyon Drake, we're already seeing like Kyler Murray is their goal line back, and he's running a bunch. But with no Drake this week, maybe he runs even more than he has been, and that leads to a lot of fantasy points very quickly. So I'm going to go with Kyler Murray.
I'm going to go Deshaun Watson here. He's had a string of four straight games of over 300 yards. He's had two or more touchdown passes in five straight games. And the Texans' defense is not particularly good. Now, I know the Jaguars' offense, as we've talked about, isn't necessarily going to go out and put up 35, 40 points. Who knows? But I do think the defense will sort of put Deshaun Watson in a situation where he has to throw the football. And maybe he celebrates a little bit more because they didn't trade his number one target in Will Fuller. So I think if there's a guy, and plus, look, there's still the running option too for Deshaun. He's had three straight games with 25 or more rushing yards as well. So there's some extra points in there. So I'm gonna peg Deshaun Watson as the guy who's going to be the big time quarterback for you this week. Is there a game in particular that you're looking forward to watching NFL-wise this week?
Well, I'm very biased in saying Bills Seahawks. That is one that I am very excited for. Besides that, Saints Bucks. I mean, seeing Antonio Brown, what's going to come from that offense? That's one that I will be watching very closely.
Yeah, I think that Saints Bucks game is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I mean, we saw it week one, but now these teams have had a time to sort of get accustomed with one another and kind of get in a rhythm. And the Antonio Brown factor, I think, is going to make it very interesting. All right, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show presented by DraftKings. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, two wrongs don't make a right, but three lefts do. Be safe, take care of yourselves, wear a mask, and we will see you on Monday.